From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Hashtag Gamergate may mean nothing to you. If you're in its grip, it may mean a lot. It's a fight, really, largely online, between digital game players, gamers, who say they want more ethical journalism in their realm, and critics who say Gamergate activists are online misogynists, thugs, bullies, trying to intimidate, dominate their world. This hour, On Point, Gamergate, culture clash, and maybe the future of hardball cultural politics. A lot of people to talk to today. Joining me first from New York is Kyle Wagner, a staff writer at Deadspin and Gawker Media's editor for Regressing, a sports feature site. His big write-up of the Gamergate affair is headlined, "The Future of the Culture Wars is Here, and it's Gamergate." You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Kyle Wagner, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Take us into this, because, you know, you've got people who are deeply enmeshed in this, and then a lot of others who will not know a thing about it, as much as it is all over the web these days. What's going on with Gamergate?
Okay, so as happens a lot of times, as much as this has a beginning, it started with a game called Depression Quest and a developer named Zoe Quinn. She released this game last year, and at the time she released it, so Depression Quest is basically a choose-your-own-adventure style game where the user goes through and just manages depression. It was critically lauded at the time, and a lot of gamers just really took offense to this because they didn't think it was a very good game, and she was harassed at the time. She received threats when it went on sale.
Mm-hmm.
And so fast forward, a few months ago, her ex-boyfriend puts up a 40,000-word post about their breakup and alleges that she cheated on him with multiple men, one of whom was a game journalist. And through gritted teeth or whatever, the allegation was that she used sexual favors to receive good coverage for her game, and this is what set everything off. From then, she received a lot of threats. She was, it's called doxed. That means her personal information was put online, nude photos, and similar.
Did you say nude photos? Is that what I heard you say?
Yes.
Okay.
So nude photos from their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And these things ended up online, and from there, other people got involved. Anita Sarkeesian, who is a notable feminist within gaming, became involved. She also received threats. And just it became an allegation, it became a discussion of whether developers were using either romantic relationships or other relationships to receive good coverage. But at the same time, the women who were involved were receiving really grotesque threats from some members of the what would later be known as Gamergate.
The threats sound bad. But just at first blush, this sounds like a spat, not a kind of apocalypse or big culture clash. What's it signify?
Right. So eventually, this meta-sized with several gaming sites writing op-eds that all had basically the same point, which was the death of gamers. And this was actually a celebration of gamers, saying that people who play games are too broad a spectrum. Like, it's video games are too popular to just identify as gamers anymore. Some people are miserable and are doing these terrible things to these women. Others just want to play games, just want to have fun. And that's basic. That was the basic conceit of these things. But it was taken very literally to mean that some people in Gamergate, or I guess most people in Gamergate, took this to mean that the video game outlets didn't like their audience, that they thought everyone was just a trollish white male who just wanted women out of gaming. And that seems to be the bedrock of what Gamergate is set on, saying, no, all of us aren't, you know, trollish white men. But that's really an argument that no one was ever making.
Threats, I don't know, death threats, sexual threats, whatever was out there, that sounds bad over reviews and so on. On the other hand, I don't mean to make an equivalency here, but I was just listening early today to video online from the gamer community saying, look, this is our world, we care about it, and this is just citizen action against unethical journalists. And yes, they're just covering games, but games are what we care about. We want honesty here. And when we push back, and they've pushed back on many fronts, including boycotts of corporations, Intel, that's dropped its sponsorship of at least one of these outlets. When we push back, we're, you know, described as grotesque. What's wrong with being good, engaged citizens? What do you say to that, Kyle?
So this has been one of the more confounding parts of this, is that I totally agree. There are totally unethical parts, things going on in video game journalism. I covered tech for a long time, and it faces all consumer product journalism faces basically the same problem, which is that you trade access for favors or whatever else, and this is going on all over the place. Some of the biggest outlets in video game journalism have very close relationships with some of the biggest publishers, and this is what gets you like slanted coverage, or coverage that will lead people to buy games that maybe they won't enjoy as much. These are the real fundamental ethical issues in games journalism, and this doesn't seem to be what Gamergate is talking about. They're talking about more just they don't want what they call social justice warriors coming in and telling them that they need more feminism in their games or that their games are misogynist. This isn't traditionally what's known as ethics in journalism, but that seems to be their talking point, and that's what they're calling it.
And that is certainly out there. You mentioned Anita Sarkeesian, the creator of Feminist Frequency. It's a website that criticizes patriarchy and misogyny in video games. Those things are not hard to find. She got death threats and last week canceled the talk at Utah State over threats of the deadliest school shooting in U.S. history. Here's a clip from one of her videos where she talks about how many women in the video games serve as only objects for men.
These sexually objectified female bodies are designed to function as environmental texture, while titillating presumed straight male players. Sometimes they're created to be glorified furniture, but they are frequently programmed as minimally interactive sex objects to be used and abused.
Won't you join us?
And yes, you can find plenty of that. Here's a little sound from a game called Dishonored. A player encounters a prostitute.
Hey, sweetheart. You want to play with me? You're a lot cuter than my regulars.
And another from Binary Domain. Player goes to a brothel.
Sorry, all booked up. Too bad, too, because I would have given a stud like you a free sample.
Okay, Kyle, here maybe we hear the sound of a culture clash. I mean, you have just described gamers who say they don't want to be the target for social justice warriors. They feel harassed and perhaps put upon. Then you've got others, women and more, saying, look, we want to change this. And by the way, you don't own this world anymore. I guess when people wrote what gamers are over, meaning the traditional stereotype of who was the gamer, it's more diverse than that. Let's change the games themselves. Is that the culture clash you're talking about, Kyle?
It seems to be. So there are two things going on here. One is that the argument against Anita bringing these things up, which I don't agree with at all, is saying that she's cherry-picking. Of course she's cherry-picking. That's the point, that a lot of the popular games, not all of them, no one is ever arguing all of them, but many of them have things like the ones you just highlighted, just topless prostitutes being murdered on screen for really to no end. It's just to, as Anita said, just to titillate instead of to inspire any thought. So that's one. But two, well, actually, that kind of dovetails into the argument that we don't want women to tell our creators that they can't, you know, express themselves or whatever. But it really is just to titillate, just to entice a young male audience into, you know, enjoying a game as only a young male audience could enjoy it. Like, if you're a young female or a young gay man, that's not going to, you know, appeal to you in exactly the same way.
We're going to hear later in this hour from Milos Yiannopoulos. His headline was Feminist Bullies Tearing the Video Game Industry Apart. It's sort of pushback on this front. But you say in all this, for listeners who are thinking, why do I care about this inside baseball gamer thing? You say this is a dress rehearsal maybe for a culture clash for American politics on a much larger stage. How so? What do you mean, Kyle?
So this is an audience. It's young, male, traditionally white, but increasingly less so there. Mm-hmm. that has traditionally been catered to by the video game industry. So all these games, so Call of Duty, all the games that have just sex objects walking around the screen, that's those have been made specifically for them. But like what they're right about is that it is a zero-sum scenario where if developers and publishers start to turn their attention to a broader spectrum of game, then they can't dedicate the same amount of resources to the type of games that have traditionally been enjoyed by them. This is where they're correct in that maybe there won't be as many Halo clones coming out, or maybe there won't be as many Call of Duty clones coming out.
A kind of mirror image of the wider society where all kinds of privilege may be challenged as our demographics change. But you say the politics may change as well, that this kind of activist go after them with online tools. This isn't just a nice debate. This is really getting in people's faces, putting their addresses in nude pictures, and there are death threats out there. That this is hardball roller derby politics playing out here that you say could spread.
Of course. So you're seeing that with our company right now, actually. So Gawker Media, which owns both Kotaku, which is involved in this story, and Deadspin, where I work, is under boycott, and Gamergate right now is peppering anyone who advertises with Gawker Media to cease doing so.
That's the right, but it gets messy in a hurry. Kyle Wagner, please stand by at Deadspin. It's great to have you. We're talking about Gamergate. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about something called Gamergate. You may know all about it. We're looking at the online uproar over sex, sexism, ethics, and charges of misogyny, corruption in the online gaming world. It's into rough stuff. It's spiraling offline. My guest Kyle Wagner with Deadspin and Gawker Media says it may be a model for the future of American politics, culture clash style, where things in the internet age can quickly spiral right off of that screen into your life. There have been death threats here, people calling police to protect them, all about a kind of clash over culture and, many gamers say, journalistic ethics in their corner of the world. Kyle Wagner joins us from New York. Here's an interview with BBC Business Matters Forbes contributor Eric Kane, saying the core of Gamergate was initially that gamer journalists weren't being honest with their readers because they're too cozy with gamers and developers.
The problem we're seeing with the whole Gamergate controversy right now in terms of journalistic ethics is that everyone is so angry and there's so little dialogue going on that it looks like, you know, these sites don't want to talk about it because they have something to hide. I think that the more upfront that any of these sites can be, the better, whether or not there's actually any problems going on.
We'll be joined in just a moment by Arthur Chu, Soraya Chamali, Milo Yiannopoulos. Let's get our callers in here. Paul in Atlanta, Georgia. Thank you for calling, Paul. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, I'm on now.
You're on.
Right. I wanted to call in and point out the whole, everyone in Gamergate is fighting against corrupt journalists who have decided what they want to report on. They've decided that they're going to make games about feminism. They're going to, doesn't matter what the purpose of whatever they're reviewing was, they're going to turn it into feminism. One of the most recent examples of this is a Polygon review for Bayonetta 2.
Okay.
So it's this game which features a very attractive female protagonist.
Yep.
Her outfit is tight leather, and she's ridiculously campy, and of course, she's being very sexual throughout the game.
Okay.
Now, most game review sites looked at this game and they said, well, okay, here's our stance on the gameplay, here's our stance on the story, here's what we like about this game. We rate it 8 out of 10 or something like that.
All right.
Polygon, who is implicated in the Gamergate scandal, looked at Bayonetta and said, look, this game has its merits, but we're not going to talk about that. We're going to point out that this character is a sexual object, and that is abhorrent because we are feminists. We cannot abide by having a character who's a sexual object. They're saying that all women are there for sex, and that's their only point. Now, not only does that go against one of the core views of feminism, which is you shouldn't slut-shame people. It's okay to be in touch with your sexuality. Like,
all right,
fine.
All right.
You do that. But not only that, the character Bayonetta was created by a woman to help empower females. These
I've got the outline there, and I'm really glad you called. But let me ask you, what about people who say, okay, Paul, gamer, first of all, they have the right to abhor something in the game, right? I mean, that's just free speech. If they abhor it, what's wrong with saying that?
There's nothing wrong with them stating that somewhere in their opinions.
Yeah.
If I found that opinion in a game review I was making, I would mention that, and I would say, hey, if you're uncomfortable with this idea,
yeah,
this could set you off of the game some, and
right,
you might want to dock some points from your score.
Right. Okay, I get that. Let me ask you this then, Paul. Let's take it a little further, because you know it's gotten pretty rough out there around this, right? Some of the people, women included, who've written about this have had all kinds of threats, up to and including death threats. They've had their nude photos put up online. They've had their addresses and all kinds of docs, you know, data put out there. What about those who say this is turning into a kind of Alamo of white guys who've been catered to for so long, and when they take a little heat for, you know, how they've been catered to, suddenly they're attacking people not only online, but it spills offline, and it's thuggishness. What do you say to that, Paul?
One of the things I really hate about that argument is the initial point of the argument is the appeal to social progressiveness. You're saying, hey, you're just white men. You have a wrong opinion on that. But not only that, because of that argument, we Gamergate supporters have to create the Not Your Shield hashtag, which you can look up online.
This is non-white players who say, hey, we're in there too, and we also want these sex object characters in the games or something.
Yeah, well, it's not about them wanting this sexual character objects in game. It's about them not wanting this journalism to be about the politics that they perceive in a game. They want to know about the games and stuff.
Is it possible, Paul, that this is the rest of the country kind of knocking on your door and saying, hey, you're going to have to deal with us too? Maybe you're just going to have to take some heat about that. You know, we all take heat about stuff.
Could you rephrase that?
You know, it's such a fuzzy point. I'm just going to – I rescind my point. I drop it. But I appreciate your call very much. Let me get a response here from a couple of folks. Soraya Chamali joins us right now, activist and writer. Her recent piece, The Unsafety Net, How Social Media Turned Against Women, is this month's Atlantic magazine. You can link to it at onpointradio.org. Soraya, thank you very much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me this morning.
Arthur Chu is with us, actor, comedian, culture blogger, gamer, well known for his big string of victories on Jeopardy in March of this year. He wrote in the Daily Beast, Gamergate and the Root of Reactionary Rage. Arthur Chu, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Okay, Soraya, you hear Paul. He's calling from Atlanta, and he says, come on, this is what we want. What's so wrong about that? We want honest assessment. We don't want campaigning in the journalism around us. We just want, is it a good game or a bad game, and what's wrong with that?
I think there are several things that he touches on that actually speak to what Kyle is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
There are very legitimate concerns about journalism ethics in gaming. But those concerns actually are legitimate in lots of different arenas, right? So you could talk about sports media's collusion in the NFL's culture of enabling domestic violence, right? You could have the same kind
yes.
of conversations yep. about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing unique to gaming about that. Likewise, there's nothing unique to gaming about the expressed misogyny that we see, and it's not new. So while I agree with Kyle that it's emblematic of larger cultural issues,
mm-hmm.
I would say this is a long-standing problem.
Sure.
It's been around since the inception of the internet. Mm-hmm. It's a reflection of misogyny and culture. You see it in the music industry. Lauren Mayberry talked about it. She's lead singer of the Churches. You see it in atheism. Many women in that community have been targeted with this level of misogyny. You see it in media. Caroline Criado Perez
predates the internet by maybe a millennia, but okay.
Right.
So what?
And so I think that as far as journalism is concerned and the issue of diversity, those things come together if you consider this notion of objectivity that Paul talked about. Mm-hmm. Paul is saying we want media that talks about games, right, which is a perspective, frankly, of privilege because some people's subjectivity is considered objective in media, right? And so the way that people talk about feminism marginalizes it and says that's not neutral, when in reality, it's a pretense to suggest that what we consider neutral is neutral at all. So the idea that people shouldn't be talking about their games in terms of what they like is based on the idea that there is someone and there's always someone defining standards. So what's actually tearing the industry apart is not feminist bullies, which is kind of an idea detached from the notions of power that we know we live with, but differences in worldviews about norms and standards and who gets to be a real gamer and who gets to say what real games are.
So status quo being challenged here, that's always difficult in any culture. I've got that perspective I want to bring in right now, but just because it goes right to this, if I may, stand by Soraya in Washington. From London, Milo Yiannopoulos joins us, technology, media, society writer, associate editor at Breitbart. He's covered the gamer media ethics angle of the Gamergate controversy for months. Milo, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I've read your piece here, and I'm looking at the headline. You take kind of the opposite tack from Soraya. Your headline, Feminist Bullies, Tearing the Video Game Industry Apart. You say it's easy to mock video gamers as dorky loners in yellowing underpants. I've done it myself, you write. But you say the more you learn about this latest scandal, the more you're sympathetic. But you hear Soraya saying, look, this is just the tension of changing social norms. How do you see it, Milo?
Well, it certainly isn't that. And it's not borne out by facts to claim that the internet is in any way a place specifically hostile to women. We know, for example, from Pew Global data that in fact it's men who are harassed more online than women. 32% of them are called offensive names versus 22% for women. 44% of men say they've been harassed online versus only 37% for women. And you'll hear scoffing as we in fact just did.
I've heard it already. I'm a little tempted myself, and not because, I mean, I found your essay really interesting, but I didn't expect you to lead with this. Because, I mean, I just go on the web.
What I'm attempting to show is that the question you asked me was, about feminist bullies, and do I think that's a fair representation? Yes, I do. Because what's happening with video games is a small number of highly active feminist critics who claim statistics and create arguments that do not bear scrutiny, who make claims about video games that do not bear scrutiny, that are not fair, that unfairly characterize not just what video game publishers produce, but also video gamers themselves. And the reaction...
But why shouldn't they? If they don't like it, why shouldn't they talk about it? I mean, if you go back in American culture, Milo, we had singers in blackface, sort of, right? So who were imitating or sort of black people singing in a kind of a deeply caricatured and racist way. And that eventually came up against social norms and people criticized it.
Well,
it fell away.
It's fairly outrageous for you to compare the incorrect criticisms from far left fringe critics who have friends in the media who propagate these messages, friends in the media who have many ethical failings about which Gamergate...
Agreed, acknowledged.
...are entirely justified in criticizing. And the current consumer activism that they have engaged in only irritates the authoritarian left because they're so much better at it.
I'm not about authoritarian left. No, I'm about social norms changing.
And if you want to talk about race, well, let's talk
about
race.
I don't. I want to talk about social norms.
You just compared what's going on here to blackface. If you want to talk about blackface, let's talk about Gamergate supporters. Right? Oliver Campbell, the journalist who lost his job and has been blackballed by this. Jason Miller, the guy who invented the Not Your Shield hashtag, both black men. Look at the people who support from journalism or academia Gamergate. You've got Christina Hoff Summers from the American Enterprise Institute, a female feminist scholar. You've got me from Breitbart, a gay dude. I mean, if this is a victory of heteropatriarchal oppression, I'd hate to see what the opposite looks like.
Milo, stand by a second. We're looking at Gamergate. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Arthur Chu in Cleveland, you're listening. You heard Soraya. You hear Milo. These are just clashing worldviews, and I'm not sure that we'll get them sorted out, but it's playing out in a way that's become so fraught. What do you see? Stand by, please, Milo. Arthur, what do you see going on here?
One thing about this narrative that I really dislike and that I want to take a stance against now is the idea that it's gamers or people who play games versus the outside world. The outside world didn't care about any of these issues for a very long time. Mm-hmm. These issues have been brought up by people who love games and have played games their whole lives and have eventually reached a critical mass of getting tired of complaining into the void about the ways in which games culture treats them badly.
Mm-hmm.
That includes gamers of color. That includes women who play games. It does not include 100% of gamers of color and women who play games speaking in lockstep, which is a sort of straw man that was set up. Yes, I know there are women and people of color and not your shield who are on the Gamergate side. But the vast majority of the impetus behind this thing that people are now reacting against, you know, saying games culture needs to be more inclusive, games need to change, is from gamers.
I take your point. That's diverse. But what about Milo's point saying, wait a minute, back off. Lots of people face abuse online and maybe everywhere else in the world. Women are wrong to say that they're up against some special misogyny here.
I'm not going to play games with statistics here. I don't have a laptop in front of me with different studies I can pick from. I can tell you that I can compare directly the reactions that I get and that women talking about the same subject get online, and I feel a lot safer about it. I feel bad talking about
controversial
issues.
As a man, you feel safer.
As a man,
yeah.
Yes. As a man, I feel safer. As a man, I have done a lot more to directly engage with and antagonize people in Gamergate and have gotten comparatively – this is not a request, mm-hmm. but I have gotten comparatively a lot less backlash, a lot less direct harm than women who – even many women who comparatively speak very little about it. Felicia Day, her crime was putting up one Tumblr post saying that – not making an argument, just saying she felt threatened by Gamergate, and the response was to post her personal information online.
Mm-hmm.
It's not – you just have to be in the – to say that, like, with all due respect, Milo says that he thinks that gamer culture has no inherent problem with misogyny. Milo also says that he wasn't a gamer at all until a couple months ago. Anyone who's ever gone on to Xbox Live or gone into team chat in a game and has seen the way women are talked about and the way that women who are playing there have to keep their gender secret or have to have to try to – you know, in order to avoid being harassed for it, it's a commonplace mainstay of the culture. I say that as someone who's played games my whole life. It's obvious.
Arthur, hold that thought. Milo, Soraya, Kyle, just a bit from you here. I mean, I guess the thing that's got your attention is how rough this has become. We hear the debate here, but these online challenges can turn into harassment. Everybody's claiming harassment here, but the whole thing becomes very fraught, and it spills offline, Kyle, into people's lives, into their sense of safety in the world.
It does, and I'm going to build on something that Arthur said. So I got a lot of reaction coming out of my article, but almost all of it was positive from just actual gamers who hadn't been hurt in all this. Like, Gamergate is a portion of gamers, but it's clearly not all of them. And everyone was just very supportive. But yes, like, I have received a little bit of harassment, but other people have received a lot more, and like have actually been have their lives like put in danger. Like Brianna Wu, who is a game developer, had to flee her home because she was threatened with rape and murder. Like, this is actually something that I feel strongly about, that Gamergate doesn't understand that...
Kyle, hold the thought. Talking Gamergate. This is On Point.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Gamergate and the online uproar over sex, sexism, ethics, and charges of misogyny, corruption in the online gaming world. It's into rough stuff. It's spilling offline. With us today, Kyle Wagner from Deadspin, Milo Yiannopoulos, joining us from London, associate editor at Breitbart. Arthur Chu is here. You know him from Jeopardy and his big winning streak there. Joins us from Cleveland. Soraya Chamali is with us. She has written big in The Atlantic, calling the internet the unsafety net, how social media turned against women. It's in this month's edition. There's a huge controversy here, a lot of fighting going on online. It gets rough. And the internet
more than, let's say, dueling commentaries on the pages of a newspaper can really get into your face, into your life. Put your address out there, all kinds of information, doxing, put it out there, your documents, put nude photos have shown up here, threats, death threats have shown up here. Kyle Wagner writes that this may be a trial run for a new kind of American politics when culture clash comes to the fore. Milo says, come on, this is bullying. This is PC bullying, but people are all over the map on this one. Let me get Remy on air, Syracuse, New York. Remy, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure. What do you see?
Well, I wanted to start, I'm going to work backwards.
Okay.
I wanted to start, first off, I wanted to actually ask Arthur a question.
Okay.
As a part of Not Your Shield, and for people who are listening that don't know what that is, Not Your Shield is a part of Gamergate. We are the women and the minorities and the voices that gaming journalism was trying to paint out of the conversation.
And your presence says, in part, it's not all white men complaining here. What, you're not a man, and you're complaining too, I guess.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask, Arthur, how do you feel, I mean, coming on and doing things and saying these things that I agree with. I mean, I agree things are tough for women. Things are tough for everybody. But you did things like tweet like Not Your Shield.
Yes, I did.
You tweeted things about me and about my friends and people I talk to every day that are just, they're dreadful things. And then you come on.
What dreadful things?
And you have
Remy, can you clarify? Are you saying that Arthur was intimidating unsatisfactorily insulting in a tweet or something?
I don't want to assume what his intention was. That's not the sort of person.
But what did he say that was so bad? Just to give us a sense of trying to understand what you're pointing to. I haven't read it.
In internet culture, we have this thing, tweet like thing that you're mocking.
Oh, I see.
So tweet like.
Yes, and I intended to mock Not Your Shield.
Article.
Yes.
And so, the way that I took Arthur's tweets were, I took them as hurtful. I mean, they were definitely hurtful to me. So I don't understand, as somebody who wants understanding for women and wants understanding for minorities, how do you start a hashtag like that?
Okay, I'm actually gonna respond to this, because I actually tweeted, I think Not Your Shield is like the worst thing that came out of this. It is worse than Gamergate itself, because it's using identity, it's literally, ironically, using identity politics as a shield by saying Not Your Shield. It's saying that the reason people are criticizing racism or sexism in gaming is that they are saying that all people of a given race or all people of a given sex must be offended. And if one person comes out and says, I'm not offended, then we can shut down the conversation. In fact, it pretty much turns into this weird reversal where all of a sudden it's a lot like the Redskins name controversy. People are saying real Indians don't care. Look at this poll. Obviously, it's only the PC, you know, white upper class latte liberal, whatever stereotype you want to use, left that cares about it.
But Remy's point is,
it's the white agitators from the civil rights movement.
Yeah, but
it's
that stereotype. She's saying she felt hurt by what you put there.
Well,
others
I feel
hurt
about
by
Not
things.
Your Shield.
Yeah.
It's stupid. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I was that guy. Okay, in college, I was the Asian guy saying, okay, I personally don't have a problem with this. I personally don't have a problem with these stereotypes. I enjoy this movie, and there's nothing wrong with me doing that. But there's something wrong with parading me around and saying, because of that, everyone who says there's a problem here, that there's a general overall problem in the culture, has to shut up. And that's what gets me. That's what gets it's
Arthur,
it is
Arthur,
using it
we've
as a shield.
It. We've got it. And Remy, I appreciate your calling as well. Parker in Chicago. Parker, thank you for calling. You're on.
Oh, thank you for having me. And I just want to say thank you for having this discussion.
Sure.
My big question or big issue was this. I was very neutral coming in, but I tend to just do a lot of reading. I have a little bit of time.
Okay.
And I think, like, the biggest thing that stuck out to me was this Game Journo's Pros listserv. And I think it was basically, if I understand it correctly, it was a group or a large group of journalists from across the gamut of game journalism, including mainstream media outlets.
All right.
That would discuss behind the scenes ways in which to present stories. And I think a lot of gamers are upset about this. And I think it's reflective of kind of the mistrust of the gaming media.
Hey, Parker, explain something to me, because I'm not into the gaming world. Why would they even do that? I mean, what would they collude to? What would be the agenda of? I mean, they're reviewing video games. What's the big deal?
Well, there's a lot of financial incentives. The gaming industry is
what sells.
I mean, we're talking about, you know, multi-billion-dollar industry.
Okay, I get that. Yeah.
And you basically reviews, especially Metacritic scores, really affect the game developer. I mean, financially, you get a bonus if you get a certain Metacritic score.
Yeah.
And if, let's say, a game developer doesn't say something that really jives with the media, a lot of people will gang up and you know, bully them.
Parker, let me take it right there. I know you've got more, but we have so much on our plate here. I want to get back to London, but let me pick that up. Kyle Wagner at Deadspin. Can we just for a second look at this? I mean, we've got people online. Christopher says, please focus on the specifics of the corruption in journalism. Within any movement, you're going to have, you know, people who take it too far. Is it possible, Kyle, that there's a legitimate complaint at the heart of this? And yes, some people with Gamergate become violent, menacing. Some are misogynistic, you name it. But that there is a place here for kind of citizen action in this realm, and that's what some are doing.
So as I mentioned before, there are gaming journalism is fraught with economic and other ethical gray areas. But to go back to what Milo was talking about earlier, seems to be at issue is Milo says that there are a lot of outside feminists, very few, he says, I would disagree, that have friends in the media that are framing discussions in a certain way. Mm-hmm. They feel that that is unethical. If that is accurately their argument here, I would ask, what do they think is going to be the substantive end to that? What's being...
I don't quite get that question. What do you mean, Kyle? I don't get it.
Basically, any feminist activist or black activist, whatever, like I have a friend, Evan Narcisse at Kotaku, who has argued over and over that we need more black characters, black main characters who are fleshed out fully in video games. And what they're asking for is representation, just more better characters. At the end of the day, people are asking for better stories, better characters, better writing to elevate gaming up to a higher level of art. That's really what they're asking for. So I'm curious what the objection to that is.
Milo, what's the objection? If that's the request, what's the objection, Milo Yiannopoulos?
That isn't the request. Obviously, that's a mischaracterization. What's in fact happening, and I note with interest, you know, Gawker, possibly one of the whitest media organizations on the planet, you know, has taken up the cudgels for diversity. I know also that Gawker is taking up, you know, the defense of people who have been doxxed. This is Gawker, an organization that routinely bullies public figures to come out as homosexual, outs some of them. Itself. It has no moral authority whatsoever to talk about any issues of online bullying. But I will answer the question.
Okay.
You know, this is not an issue of making games a higher art form. What people are worried about, and I think with some justification, is that these wrong criticisms will influence game developers to introduce tokenism into games, which nobody is really asking for. Consumers aren't asking for this. And I just want to address one thing very, very briefly. I'm sorry that it's not quite the question that you asked me, but it's really, really super important. We're talking as if women tiptoe into this sphere and are suddenly assaulted by this wave of misogyny. Well, let's just be completely honest with ourselves here. Some of the feminist critics, and I will say, you know, there is no justification whatsoever for the doxing. There is no justification whatsoever for abuse and threats. And the people who do it should be caught.
Doxing, that is exposing people's personal documents online as a kind of punishment.
No excuse for any of that.
Yep.
These people should be punished. These people should be incarcerated where necessary. However, this isn't happening out of the blue to women who innocently tiptoe into this subject and get barrages of abuse. These women are professional provocateurs.
You call them an army of sociopathic feminist programmers abetted by... Really?
That is exactly what some of them are. I am a provocative columnist, but what I don't do when I receive criticism, and in some cases death threats, and as a result of Gamergate, I had a syringe through the mail, far more horrific than anything I've heard of on the other side.
Good.
I have to be honest with you.
Not good.
But what I don't do about it is play the victim, set up a Kickstarter page, which so many of these women do, asking for money and sympathy, and do a press tour. What I do is accept the consequences of being a provocative journalist and say, you know what? I'm going out there. I'm saying controversial things sometimes.
Yeah.
irritating people sometimes.
But they shouldn't have to have death threats, right? You know, they shouldn't. And what if they really feel that there's oppression going on? You say not. We got that. Hold the thought. Zoe in Block Island, Rhode Island, calling in. Zoe, thank you for calling. You're on with Milo and the rest.
Hi. I'm a female gamer myself. This is a pet issue of mine. Feminism in video games is pretty close to my heart since it's the community I'm most involved in.
Okay.
And regardless of whether or not this is about gamer journalism, one has to acknowledge the fact that it's still attacking. The community out there is terrifying. I've received threats. I've received, like, it's very scary out there to be a woman sometimes, even in very casual scenarios. You learn very early on never to mention that you're female. It's terrifying. And I'm not a columnist. I'm not anything.
What do you mean? You're playing a game, right? So what's terrifying? And forgive me, Zoe. I don't doubt it, but I just don't quite get it.
So oftentimes in multiplayer games,
yeah,
there is a certain there's communication between players.
Okay.
And you learn never to say you're a girl.
Because
if you do, it immediately becomes threats. Misogyny, the jokes like that start are uncomfortable at first, and then they just get worse and worse. And oftentimes you have the ability to step away from that, but you know it's there. Every time you want to walk into something, you know it's there.
What kind of threats are you talking about?
I've had violent threats. I've had rape threats, just any kind of thing like that. That if you're a woman, especially if you're winning, they get mad.
Zoe, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. We're talking about Gamergate. Soraya, you've got Milo saying, come on, everybody faces rough stuff on the web. Women shouldn't feel singled out. You've got Zoe, a gamer, who says, you know, let it be known that you're a woman, and you've got, I don't know, rape threats in the middle of the game. And here we see it in Gamergate spilling out of Gameland into the real world. But Milo's saying, you know, the world is not a perfect place. Come on.
So a couple of things. One is that the reference that Milo made earlier, excuse me, mm-hmm. to the Pew research is research that was released yesterday, in which the study concluded that women in particular suffer from severe harms of online harassment. Men suffer overall, but this indicates the problem with the word harassment. Men are called offensive names. They are purposefully embarrassed. Mm-hmm. They experience physical threats, particularly if they're in the gaming community. Mm-hmm. Women, however, are stalked. They're sexually harassed. They're physically threatened. And the harassment that they experience is a sustained form of harassment. And those are qualitatively different things, right? It's very different to be called name from being stalked for months or years on end. Mm-hmm. And so what we're talking about when we say harassment masks the reality of the connection between online and offline violence against women. And it goes directly to this point of who establishes norms. Mm-hmm. Because when we say things like imminent threat or imminent harm as a baseline for how to determine danger, that in itself is androcentric, because men are hurt by strangers, right, in acts of punctuated violence. Women live with and adapt to pervasive and constant threats in their homes and in public space. It's why we hold keys in our hands. It's why we join gyms. It's mm-hmm. why we have parking strategies, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you see that translated into interactions online. So what the caller just talked about is very prevalent in gaming. There's a study that shows that up to 70% of women playing multiplayer games change their online personas to male so that they are not harassed. Women are 90% of the victims of male-perpetrated revenge porn. They're 100 times more likely to experience harassment online if they have female names. And so this becomes not something that is solely focused on individuals who may or may not be having these experiences, but it's a class-based form of violence, right? And so when we talk about gaming within the larger context of atomized misogyny, we have to be able to appreciate the fact that there's no equivalence between being called an offensive name time and sustain harassment. And the norm setting that we're talking about in the gaming industry, in journalism, is implicated in ignoring that fact because it doesn't actually recognize that those are legitimate concerns.
So I've got it. I'm sure he would have many disagreements there. Kyle, I want to bring it to you once more because many people outside gaming may still be listening to this and say, so what? You write, Kyle, that what we're seeing here is a rehearsal where the mechanisms, you write, of a toxic and inhumane politics are being tested and improved. Tomorrow's Lee Atwater will work through, you know, internet sock puppets. Tomorrow's Sister Soldier will get shattered down with rape threats. What are you saying the implications are, Kyle, for the larger culture, the larger political culture?
It's a silencing mechanism. Gamergate has evolved to this point where they are running what they call ops against anyone who disagrees with them. So instead of engaging on the substance of whatever claims or whatever central claims seem to be happening, they have decided that they will silence entire media outlets based on politics. I mean, they're calling it ethics, but the central points are they don't like social justice warriors, feminists, just anyone talking about, you know, progressive politics coming in and talking about games. Well, if that goes from gaming to, let's say, movies, they don't want more feminist movies or anything else, this is what the front looks like. And you can attack advertisers, you can attack whoever, and it's an attempt to silence media and also supporters outside of your sphere of privilege.
So it's a heads up here today. Politics has never been a beanbag, but maybe a little rougher, maybe significantly rougher, in a new realm, and you've all helped us understand it better. I'm so grateful, Kyle Wagner at Deadspin, Milo Yiannopoulos at Breitbart, Arthur Chu, you know him very well from Jeopardy. He's written at the Daily Beast, and Soraya Chamali at The Atlantic. So good to have all of you with us. Lots of links online at onpointradio.org. Thank you very much for being with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.